Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Dawn B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Southern California. Today's Wednesday, August 7th, 2024, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book, and we're on page 37, the third paragraph. In some circumstances, we have gone out through one paragraph ending what the terrific consequences might be. And we'll be commenting on this one paragraph today. Today's readers, 12 Steps, EDH, 12 Traditions, Nancy DM. Readers of the text, Kara L., Eileen M., and Vanessa G. The reference number for Tuesday, August 6, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 21,632. That's 21632. And for this morning, Wednesday, August 7, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the reference number is 21,638. That's 21638. Our newcomer greeter this morning is Carla C., and Jody E. will do the announcements. Thank you to everyone who is providing service for this meeting. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. I'll now ask EDH to read the 12 steps of OA.
Good day, everyone. This is EDH, compulsive eater and food addict, gratefully recovering in the state of Alabama. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step number two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Step four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, we humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Step eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. Step 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you so much, EDH. I'll now ask Nancy DM to read the 12 traditions of OA.
Hey, everyone. I'm Nancy DM, compulsive eater and anorexic in Pennsylvania. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on OA unity. 2. For a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence a name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need all at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for letting me do service, and I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Nancy DM. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and the literature we are discussing and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we're on page 37, the third paragraph. In some circumstances, we have gone out through one paragraph ending of what the terrific consequences might be. We'll be commenting on this one paragraph today. I'll now ask Kara L. to read and then share with us.
Good morning. This is Kara L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Long Beach, California. In some circumstances, we have gone out deliberately to get drunk, feeling ourselves justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like. But even in this type of beginning, we are obliged to admit that our justification for spree was insanely insufficient in the light of what had always happened. We now see that when we begin to drink deliberately instead of casually, there is little serious or effective thought during the period of premeditation of what the terrific consequences might be. Good morning. This is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater in California. And, oh, what a weighty paragraph. And I love the line that I really have drawn notice to is justification for the spree was insanely insufficient in the light of what always happened. And, you know, during the thought process of the premeditation of the terrific consequences might be, there's little or no, right? And I used to call that I'm justified, screw it, my life sucks. It wasn't even this will make me feel better. It's like, I deserve it. Right. And it was always, you know, gosh, the consequences in the end, not only did I wreak emotional havoc on everyone around me, including myself. You know, talk about the bull and the china shop. You know, I just ran over everyone's emotions and such. Then the demoralization afterwards from an eating spree, you know, and the amount that I told myself what a bad person I was and that I was unlovable. And I believed all those things. And it was insane, you know. What rescued me from that cycle of, you know, going to bed every evening demoralized with how I had eaten throughout the day. And at that point, I hadn't even thought of the consequences of my actions with others. And then getting up in the morning and continuing to feel bad and making, you know, a strong promise that this would be the day, and then continuing to, you know, have my diet breakfast and then compulsively.
Kara, we're not able to hear you. Star one, Kara. Perhaps she had some technical difficulty here. May I be heard? Am I being heard?
Yes, you're being heard.
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. Okay, well, perhaps Kara, star one. Okay, maybe she, we can come back to Kara and get the rest of her share. But I'm now going to take the names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So I will now take a list of names, and if Kara comes back on the line, we would love to hear the rest of her share as well. So go ahead and give me your name if you'd like to share.
Joanne B. Vermont.
Joanne B.
Wendy M.
Wendy M.
Eileen M.
Eileen M. Okay, and did Kara L. come back on the line? No, doesn't sound like it. Okay. Anyone else like to share? Okay, we'll start with that lineup. Joanne B., go ahead and share with us, followed by Wendy M. and then Eileen M. So go ahead, Joanne. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. This is Joanne B. from Vermont, recovered compulsive overeater. I love this paragraph. Of course, I love everything in the big book, especially this chapter. It's just chock full of wisdom and things that I can definitely identify with. And for me, when it says, you know, going out deliberately to get drunk, for me, that would be obviously going to the store deliberately and picking out a bunch of food that I want to eat deliberately. And it's almost like what would happen for me is that I would, maybe something happened at work, or with my kids, or that's something in the back of my mind that I'm not dealing with, feelings that I'm not dealing with, or, you know, I just didn't have the toolkit and I didn't have the relationship with my higher power to deal with at the time. So instead, you know, I go to the store and I get a big bag of popcorn, kettle popcorn, and a chocolate bar, or whatever it is. Sorry to talk about food. And I deliberately do that because I don't have a relationship. I didn't have a relationship with my higher power at the time. I didn't have this program. I didn't have a way to deal with the things that were like getting to me. And it's, even though it was deliberate, I could just be there in that store, and it's almost like things were shut down for me. I would just shut down and I'd be like semi-conscious almost and go into this, I call it the food fugue, I go into this mental blank spot that we talk about, and I just, next thing you know, I'm home shoving food into my mouth. And today I don't live like that anymore. I have on occasion in the last almost 2 years, like bought things at the store and eaten them in my car. And then immediately I feel that, like, you know, regret. And then, you know, I call my sponsor right away. And luckily I have those tools that I can, like, bounce back really quickly and kind of like think about, okay, what led up to this? So this is really a great reading for me today, and thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Joanne B. from Vermont. Wendy M., it's your turn to share.
Yes, good morning. This is Wendy M., recovered in Boulder, Colorado. Hello, Dawn. Thank you for your service and everyone on the line. So what comes to mind with this paragraph for me is, I'll show you. No, I'll show you how angry I am at you. I'll show you, you know, how this is going to go. And then we plop it in the mouth, right? Like, and it's not always planned, right? Like, oftentimes I'm just in a trance. And the only feeling I have is I feel hungry, right? Because we start, you know, this disease starts when we're, I don't know, 2 months old or maybe three, or it doesn't matter. But the point is I have not developed sort of this capacity to know what I'm feeling. So the only thing I'm feeling is I'm hungry, and I'll show you. And the other thing that I get from this paragraph for myself is, like, when I binged, it was like fast. It was never slow and methodical and lovely. It was like, how can I get this food in as fast as possible? Basically inhaling my food, right? That's, and what did I get? I got 8 seconds of ease and comfort. I don't know that I would even call it that, but I got 8 seconds of something. And you know, when we inhale it and then we have that deep breath, like, take a deep breath. Everything's going to be okay. I just got 8 seconds of ease and comfort. It's going to be okay. You know what I mean? I know you guys know what I mean on that one. And in terms of justifiable, right, justification, right, I always just put the word lie ahead of there. And I say this all the time, but I'll say it again. I have to lie to get the hit. That's how I get the hit. I have to make up some reason, some justification. And as somebody said, you know, we may not even know that we're angry. You know, I'll show you, I'm going to binge at you. We may not even know that what the feelings are. They're sort of lurking, right? They're sort of sitting there underneath everything else. And the only thing I feel is hunger. And the other thing I want to say is that instead of that 8 seconds of ease and comfort, shoving that down as fast as possible, the program is ease and comfort. God is ease and comfort. I can tell you today, if you're struggling, I can tell you that when you work this program exactly as, you know, outlined, you get ease and comfort. You know, I haven't had the need to show you anything through food or otherwise. I haven't had the need to stay in a trance because I have 10 steps to do every day, right? Where I become conscious of what's going on inside. So I'm not going to show you through food. I'm just not. You know, so what do I get today? I get God. I get freedom. I get freedom from myself, freedom from the bondage of deliberately getting drunk. So thanks. Thank you, Dawn.
Thank you so much, Wendy M. from Colorado. Eileen M., it's your turn to share. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about page 37, that third paragraph. In some circumstances, we have gone out through one paragraph ending of what the terrific consequences might be. So, Eileen, please share with us, and then I'll be taking some more names. Star one, Eileen. Yeah, we're not able to hear you, Eileen. Okay, maybe she had some technical difficulties there as well. I'll go ahead and take more names, and we'll come back to Eileen of people who would like to share on this paragraph.
Eileen?
Oh, there we are. Go ahead, Eileen.
Thank you. The call dropped somehow. Anyway, my name is Eileen, and I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in New Hampshire. And, yeah, this is such a great paragraph. Before I found a vision for you 8.5 years ago, I really didn't understand the problem or the solution, and I had really no idea exactly how my life is unmanageable. You know, I'm looking at this word justified, and I looked that up in the dictionary. It means having a good or legitimate reason for taking an action. You know, I always thought that my overeating was because of my life circumstances. And, you know, you all told me that it's the way I think about the things that are happening. Because, you know, life is going to happen, and there's things out of my control. And it's the way I think about it. It's, you know, was mentioned before, the lie I'm telling myself about people, places, and things. And, you know, that's what makes my life unmanageable. And, you know, I can also relate to what was previously shared. I used to overeat at people. And what I was really doing was I was overeating at the story in my head that I was telling myself about that person, you know. And it was mostly things that were very selfish, like, you know, how is that person, you know, what do they think about me, you know, which is very self-absorbed way to live, actually. You all told me that, hey, we have a solution. You know, we have this proven workable method. And, you know, if we follow the directions in the book, I mean, the big book tells us exactly what actions to take when these feelings crop up, you know, because they will crop up. You know, and there's nothing I can do. I mean, I'm so grateful because this meeting has given me, you know, not only long-term abstinence, but it's given me such a better life in every area. And I'm so grateful to everyone who does service and keeps this meeting going because you guys saved my life. So thank you. I pass.
Thank you so much, Eileen M. And I'm now going to take the names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share?
Tori S.
from Reno,
California.
I heard Tori S. And who is the other voice?
Jetta from Nevada.
Jetta from Nevada. And there was another voice in there, I believe. I have Tori
in New Jersey.
I'm sorry, who is from New Jersey?
Dina A.
Oh, Dina A. Thank you. Anyone else want to get in there? Okay, we'll start with that. Taurus, please let us know your initial and where you're calling from. It's your turn, then Jetta, and then Dina. So, Taurus, please go ahead and share with us and give me your initial and where you're calling from.
Thank you. It's Tori S. from California. So S is my last initial. What struck me in this paragraph is the deliberateness. And it brought everything into focus that when I'm in my addiction, my life gets very small. And so I just have responsibilities that I handle and then I push everything out so that I can have my time with my addiction. And so the bridge moving into recovery, I'm looking for, you know, I don't have a full, rich, full life yet. And so I start with meetings. And for me, the big game changer was outreach. Because I like to do things by myself in case I change my mind, and then I'm not really committed to a lot of different people, and nobody's disappointed, et cetera, the mind of the addict. And for me, it's like I have a good day at work, and I'm leaving work, and so part of the deliberateness is that dopamine hit, that I have when I'm thinking about where I'm going to plan the thing I'm going to do, which is the binge, the trip to the market, and I'm already feeling that dopamine. And I'm learning ease and comfort, if you will, in the old vernacular. And I'm learning that my neural pathways as an addict, my dopamine receptors are injured. And so I need like high intensity in order to feel that. And so over time, the bridge moves me into outreach. And if I move to outreach during those times, and believe me, it's like it's moving a hard muscle that I haven't built yet, then I have a community and connection. And so it's kind of resetting my mind when I want to go to the old programming and the old ways, because, of course, I have a built-in forgetter, and I didn't think it was so bad, except for I wouldn't be with all of you if it wasn't. So anyway, thanks for letting me share, and first time sharing on this meeting. Love you guys. Okay.
Thank you so much, Tori S. from California, and my apologies for messing up your name there. Jetta, it's your turn to share. Please give me your initial, and then followed by Dina A. And just a quick reminder, we're talking about page 37, that third paragraph. In some circumstances, we have gone out through the end of the paragraph of what the terrific consequences might be. So Jetta, please share with us, followed by Dina. Then I'll take
Good morning, you guys. This is Jetta, and the last name begins with P, and I'm from Nevada. And I just wanted to share that, you know, when we're in our throes of our addiction, we can justify anything. I mean, we can justify, well, you know, that person made me mad, so I will eat. Well, the person making you mad, you eating is not going to solve the mad feeling. You soothe it for a few minutes, or that ice cream, because we're shown on movies when you have a breakup, you go eat the ice cream. And it's supposed to calm the breakup, that feel, and make you feel better. But in reality, it just makes us feel sicker. And when we deliberately choose to eat, we deliberately choose to stay in our addiction, and we don't want to get out of it because, you know, we're comfortable there. And it wasn't until I came to program that I learned that, you know what, the root problem of my addiction, I'm feeding it all the time, just like the drinker drinks. They feed their addiction. The smoker smokes. They feed that addiction. The drug addict goes out and does that. They feed their addiction. And when the light comes on and you don't realize that you don't need to stay there, you can get out of this. There is hope. There is a way out. Our church says addiction is real, but recovery is possible. And it is. But you have to make that conscious effort. And I shared in my last meeting about nobody makes us eat. We choose to eat. Nobody's sitting there with a spoon forcing you to eat. And we are grown adults that we can choose and know our times to eat, know when it's time to eat. We can look at the clock and go, oh, it's 3:00. I think I'm just bored. You know what, I'll go exercise, or I'll go to the gym, I'll go read a book, I'll move myself out of the living room kitchen area so I'm not tempted, and I'll go outside, or I'll go do something else. But the thing is when we deliberately choose our addiction, it does separate us from people. We do hurt people through our addiction and those around us. I clearly, coming to program, I realized that. But yeah, it's just a deliberate choice. And, you know, it is not a good one. And I've realized when I'm upset or I'm angry, it's not food. I actually will go choose to work out. It's my choice. But it's coming through OA and the program that I've really learned how to cope and manage my addiction. Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much, Jetta P. from Nevada. Dina A. From New Jersey, it's your turn, and then I'll take some more names after that.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Dina A. from New Jersey, gratefully recovered, compulsive overeater. So I just love this meeting. I love following along with Jim's story. That's what brought me into program. reading it 10 years prior to program and realizing 10 years later, I am just like that. I have that mental twist always. And this paragraph talks about giving little serious or effective thought during the period of premeditation of what the terrific consequences might be. Now, when I was in my disease, I was giving little thought even afterwards. I kept minimizing the consequences to myself, and that's what it is like going on to the best of my ability, blotting out the consequences, blotting what I'm doing to myself, blotting out how unbearable my life is. So coming in, I'm like, my life's not unmanageable. I'm doing pretty well. And only in recovery am I able to see the huge, terrific, horrible consequences of the way I was living. So as I went through the steps this past time, my sponsor had me change all the drinking to thinking. So to me, they're so intertwined, the drinking and the thinking, the eating and the thinking, that here it says, I'm justified, I'm nervous, I'm angry, I'm worried, I'm depressed, I'm worried about what somebody else is going to think about me. I got to eat, I'm going to make myself feel better. All that thinking. And what the terrific consequences of eating was more nervousness, more anger, more worry, more depression, more self-loathing. So it just went around in this cycle, and with me the whole time saying, I'm good, no, my life is great. And I am so grateful for steps that actually address this nervousness, anger, worry, depression, irritability, discontent, dis-ease, discomfort that I really hate and I love to get away from. And the food used to take me away from it for, maybe even a half hour on the good days. And then came back like with a truckload of more when I came back. Usually in the morning, I would blot it out until the morning. And in the morning, I would wake up and be like, oh my goodness, I cannot believe I did that again. I cannot believe it. And then all that was there yesterday in the terms of the negative emotions were there, but like intensified times 100. So I'm so grateful. I don't know like which part of this paragraph, you know, is the feelings before, so I'm justified to eat, so then I eat, so then I get the feelings back. I'm just so grateful to be for today recovered and out of that loop. Now I do have nervousness and anger and worry and depression, and I have 10 steps that could really take it away. And it doesn't, it doesn't come back to bite me in the morning. It just comes back in the morning when I do an 11th step, like, oh, I've got 3 more 10 steps that I should really do. I have somewhere to go with it, and I'm really addressing the thinking, the spiritual part of this disease, and not having to turn to food. Thank you so much, Pat.
Thank you, Dina A. from New Jersey. And I'll now take the names of people who would like to share on this paragraph. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share?
Larry G. from California.
Larry G. Who else would like to share? Press star 1.
Susan, California.
Hello, everyone. Hello.
Susan from California. And what's your initial, Susan?
B.
B as in boy?
E as in egg.
E as in egg. Oh, perfect. Okay, and who else?
Jeannie from New Jersey.
Jeannie from New Jersey.
Jody E.
Jody E. And what's your initial, Jeannie?
N for Nancy.
Perfect. Okay. And anyone else like to share? Okay, let's go with that lineup. I have Larry G, Susan E, Jeannie N, and Jody E. Go ahead, Larry. It's your turn.
It's my turn. My name's Larry G. I'm from California. And I want to welcome all the new people. And all the people have come back. This fellowship has a lot to offer, and I hope that you grab onto something, grab hold of it, and don't let go today. Get off the sidelines and join us, because recovery is possible. We've come a long way since the doctor's opinion. And I I really want to stay grounded. I really stay grounded with Dr. Sting. I'm also in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just celebrated 43 years Friday. And what really has worked for me is to have an AA-based OA recovery, which means I don't eat my alcoholic foods no matter what. Unless I've done so innocently, I don't eat them no matter what. I have innocently taken a drink of alcohol the last 43 years, but it was innocent. It was not done maliciously or deliberately. But the doctor's opinion tells me, and it's the basis of our recovery model, the problem and the solution. The problem is outlined in the doctor's opinion. And for me, there's one simple reason why I eat. I eat because I like the effect. I've lost choice. There's got to be somewhere written in some medical journal that one of the symptoms of addiction is I have lost choice. Maybe I had choice, you know, in my early teens, young adulthood. But the truth is, if I'm really 100% rigorously honest with you,
Larry, excuse me. We want to hear every word of your precious share, and you're a little bit muffled. Is there some adjustment you might be able to make for us to be able to hear you a little more clearly? We don't want to miss any word you're saying. Are you still there, Larry? Star one? Okay, we'll come back to Larry.
God, I'm just going to pass on to someone else. I think I need to switch my headset out, and I don't want to take any more time.
Okay, if you want to come back on, we will give you more time because you have over a minute to share. We'd love to hear you.
Okay, Don. Thank you.
Okay, Susan E. from California, please share with us. It's your turn, followed by Jeannie N.
Hi, my name is Susan. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater. I just want to say hi and let everybody know that their shares are great. This meeting has been great. I don't have much to say for myself. I binged yesterday and I'm quite sick today, and it's hard for me to admit that I'm a compulsive overeater because I'm pretty much normal weight, and I've kept off a weight loss off for 6 years. And but then I do make myself sick. And anyway, thanks for letting me share. Thank you, everybody, for your awesome shares.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Susan E. from California. Jeannie N., it's your turn, and then we'll check back to see if Larry might be available. So, Jeannie N., go ahead and share with us.
Can I be heard?
You sure can.
Hi, this is Jeannie N. from New Jersey. Just want to share on that mental twist. When that mental twist comes and it says about that vagueness that you have, and it reminds me of Jim's story. I know we're not on that paragraph, but I am now struggling with abstinence versus relapse. Abstinence versus relapse, and I can't get unstuck. It's an awful place to be. When I broke my abstinence a few days ago, there was no fight. I didn't go to God. I didn't think about the steps. I ate and I can't stop it. I ask that for calls, please, for some support. I would love to talk to you. Eastern Time, 201-704-0202. 9-7.
Jeannie? Just because it's recorded, we won't announce numbers at this time. But
okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. They can look you up in the member list, Jeannie N. from New Jersey. Yeah,
thank you
so much. Thanks for your understanding. Okay, Jody E., it's your turn to share, and then I'll be taking some more names.
Thank you, Dawn. Good morning. This is Jody E., very gratefully recovered in California. So, yes, the curious mental twist is what is occurring when I suddenly, even after a period of long abstinence, I suddenly get the idea that it would be nice to have a couple of whatevers with dinner, like Fred. I get this idea that hadn't been there for a while. It hadn't been there, that idea. And suddenly it comes back. That is the mental twist. Or I go to the grocery store, and suddenly that food that is on my red light list or my yellow light list suddenly is calling to me. That is a red flag for me. If that happens, I know that there is something the matter with my spiritual condition. And that is why it's occurring. That's it. Nothing more. This is a spiritual illness. So I have to address the spiritual condition. Am I really truly working my program every day? Am I living in steps 1, 2, and 3? Committing my food or being abstinent, whatever, however I do that, turning my will and my life over to the care of God every day, doing 10 steps on a regular basis, praying and meditating, carrying the message, and practicing these principles in all my affairs. So this, there's a lot to this. It's simple, but it's not easy. And it's easy to rest on my laurels. That's what's easy, to rest on my laurels. And I can't. I cannot afford to rest on my laurels because of this mental twist. This idea will come back that I can, and I cannot. So don't be surprised when this idea, this crazy, insane idea comes into your head. Take it as an urging from your higher power that you need to do more. You need to pick up these spiritual tools laid at your feet and use them. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jody E. from California. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. So who would like to share with us?
Rob H.
This is Mary S. from Texas.
Okay, Rob H. and Mary S.
Yes.
Who is that other voice?
Nan, N-A-N-B, as in boy.
Nan B. Okay, go ahead, Rob, followed by Mary S. and then Nan.
Thank you very much. This is Rob H. some type of factory or something, but making some noise. Anyway, I read the paragraph this morning. I saw, before I came to work. I'm on my break right now, but I saw this insane thought. It got me thinking of, the last time that I was into stuff. But really, it makes me think of this morning. I was at my job, we have a dining hall, and the smell of chocolate was in the air, and they were serving pancakes and with syrup, and there was a snack, a chocolate chip Rice Krispie treat, and that's something I used to binge on a lot, was the Rice Krispie treats and pancakes and syrup, and anything that was sweet, I would definitely go for. you know, but, and I had that thought this morning. I had the thought, I had, well, boy, that would be pretty good if I had some of that, huh? And luckily, you know, through prayer and meditation, through 10 steps, and, you know, outreach with others, like talking to my sponsor and stuff, you know, I don't have to do that today. So I'm grateful for that. Yeah, I just want to keep doing this program. I feel like I'm getting a lot out of it. And I am an available sponsor for men, but yeah, anyway, I'll pass. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Rob H. And it's time now, Mary S., please take your turn to share now, and then Nan B., I don't know that we'll have time, but we'll see how it goes. So Mary S., please share with us and let us know where you're calling from.
Good morning. This is Mary S. I'm listed under Texas, and I'm calling in from Ketchikan, Alaska this morning on vacation. So the word premeditation really struck out for me this morning, and it gave me so many memories of when I would premeditate. You know, there's that murder and then premeditated murder, and murder is a strong word, but that's what I would do with my soul, my emotional body, and my physical body. Those years when I would get my stash for the whole weekend and pull the drapes and unplug the phone in those days and eat all weekend because I was so lonely and angry or worried or just wanted to escape. And then it got so bad where I had to call in sick on Mondays, and then it got so bad that the sugar wasn't working and I'd steal sleeping pills. So I finally got to the place where I realized that I was, and then the suicide thoughts came. So I really was wanting I really wanted to kill that addiction, but I ended up knowing I had an alcoholic mind. You know, my brother called me once when I was 35, and it took me another 3 years to get into program, but he had just found Al-Anon, and he says, you know, he says, you may not be alcoholic, but you may have alcoholic personality. And at that time, I thought to myself on the phone, he was my big brother, and I got off the phone, and I just thought, well, F you, and I ate, you know. And I did that a lot in my early days. Today I can say I'm recovered from that hopeless state of mind. And I don't premeditate anymore. At least I don't think so. I know I made it through Christmas last year.
Hi.
And then on the 27th, okay, I had a little spree. But God told me loud and clear that he wanted all of me. So here I am. And thank you for everyone for giving my recovery today. The past.
Thank you so much, Mary S. from Texas. And Nan, please come back tomorrow. We don't have time for you today, but we would love to hear from you, so I hope you do come back tomorrow. And we're now going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Eileen M. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then.
Hi, it's Eileen M., gratefully recovered in New Hampshire. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.